Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget. Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine.
Yes, welcome. I am Ken Levine, your podcast moderator. This is part two of my interview with Veep Sutton. And if you missed part one, after you listen to this one, go back and listen to that one. Last week, we talked a lot about his sitcom writing career. He spent many years with me on Cheers. He also created a show for Bob Newhart. He did the U.S. version of the British hit Coupling. We also talked last week about his feature career and doing a movie for Robert De Niro. And this week, we're going to turn to drama. He became a one-hour writer and spent some time on Boston Legal, also a very underappreciated show called Terriers. And we're going to talk about a very serious health scare that he had and his fight back from that. And then we're going to make another transition because he became a mystery novelist. And at one point, he collaborated with Janet Ivanovich, of all people. We are going to talk about that. We'll talk about his writing process, also some advice for young writers. Veep Sutton, part two, coming up right now.
Hollywood and Levine.
Another transition. You went from TV comedy writing to one-hour drama writing. You worked on Boston Legal, the David Kelly show. How did you make that transition?
I'd done a couple of one-hour pilots, and but I met with David, and I feeling that at the time he had wanted to bring in comedy writers to the show because he wanted a comedy. He wanted comedy in the show. So okay. There was Janet Leigh and Lawrence Brock and a number of about three or four of us who were comedy writers, and then the rest of the writers were ex lawyers or drama writers. And but then when he did that, he didn't assign the stories with any knowledge of that. Like I'd get a death penalty story, and the lawyer would get the funny story. I mean, either he forgot or he just felt that it could cross-pollinate and it would be a wonderful
Was it
experience.
Difficult to write? Was it difficult to make that transition?
I did not find it so. I basically feel that when you're writing a scene, it's about what the characters want from each other and all that. So it really isn't that different when you're writing a scene, whether you're writing a scene for a comedy, whether you're writing a scene for a drama, whether you're writing a scene for a novel. It really isn't that different. It's still the same thing. You're still trying to, you know, one person is trying to get something from another person and all that. And to be honest, drama is, hate it when I say this, writing drama is way easier. Because, you know, I used to realize that You get to the end of the scene. You get to the end of the scene where it says, he's been arrested. And then you don't have to do a joke. You don't have to do a blow, what we call a blow at the end of a scene.
Right.
You know, in a comedy, every time you do, you have the one serious line, you have to do the funny line. You have to do the funny line. And it has to be funnier than any of the other lines so that you can get you out of there. And I thought, for a while, I was still doing it. And then I realized I didn't have to. And then I thought, my God, I just saved about 5 hours out of every day. It was wonderful. And as Steve Moffat has said, too, when because he transitioned from writing comedy, writing Coupling, to writing Sherlock, and he said, you know, if you're a drama writer and you do one joke every three pages, people think you're a hilarious wit. But if you're a comedy writer and you have one joke every three page, people think, what the fuck? This guy just isn't trying, you know? You have to do three jokes a page, you know?
Right.
So I felt it was easier. And it was fun.
It sounds like, you know, you've had a storied career, but then what happened 11 years ago?
Well, it was when I was on Boston Legal. It was Valentine's Day. I went to see Music and Lyrics with Hugh Grant and Drew Barrymore with my wife. We went out to dinner, and then I went to bed. And then, as far as I was concerned, I woke up 3 days later having had brain surgery because I had an aneurysm. For my wife's side of the story, she couldn't wake me up the next morning. I was coughing up blood. I was swearing. She called the paramedics. They couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. They took me to the hospital. I was basically dying. My lungs were shutting down. Everything was I was going. They didn't know what was wrong with me. As a matter of fact, supposedly they asked me, "Have you been exposed to any toxins at work?" And supposedly I said, "No, just James Spader."
One of the great stories ever.
Because he was a bit of a handful. But then they figured out somehow what it was. I think they put me through an MRI or whatever. They figured out I had a brain aneurysm. They opened my skull. They operated on me. While they were operating on me, the aneurysm burst. So, I mean, it was that close.
Oy,
I mean, it was 25% of people who have what I have, what I had, live through it.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So then I woke up. And I imagine I'd woken up a number of times and asked what happened. But
sure.
One time it finally took, and I asked what happened. And I knew that something had gone wrong. I mean, it wasn't like I suddenly woke up in the hospital bed and thought, why am I here? I knew that something had happened. But then I had a brain aneurysm. My right side was pretty much useless. My left eye was closed. I could talk. And I could think, you know, I was a little slow, but I could think. And I felt like I was going to get better. But it was going to be a long haul. I mean, I had to learn to walk again.
How long a recovery period was that for?
Well, I mean, it kind of depends. I mean, it was at least 3 months, before I could, you know, walk, go to the bathroom, drive, you know, all these things that you don't even take for granted, you know.
Right.
My left eye.
Do a rewrite on the fan.
No.
Yeah.
But I did, you know, I was on Boston Legal and it happened right at the hiatus. So I was able to take a couple of months off. And then I went back to work because they had me back, which they didn't have to. That was very nice of them. But I probably went back too soon. But I just wanted to prove that I could do it. And then, I think shortly thereafter that there was the writer's strike. So there was another time for recovery. At which point, when I wrote, because my fear was that I can think, and I can put words together, and I have some holes in my memory, but I basically can remember. But what if the part of my brain that is funny, or what if the part of my brain that could come up with stories has been affected? How do you know?
Right.
So I, you know, I just wrote like crazy, and I think I wrote some of my best stuff. And then since then, I don't want to say that I wake up every morning and I'm thrilled to be alive and I value each day. Not really, no, but I think I do push myself harder to accomplish more and do that because, you know, this last 11 years have really been a gift. You know, I might not have had them. I might not have them. I might be in, I might, this might be the last moments of my death, and I've just imagined these 11 years. I don't know. You might just be a figment of my imagination, like occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge.
This is actually lost.
yes, exactly.
Yeah, this is St. Elsewhere. Your version of St. Elsewhere.
Yes.
I don't remember the year, but you were doing television, and all of a sudden you came in with a published novel. Which was really good. Yeah. What year was that? And again, talk about that transition. How you went from TV writing to writing novels.
God, it was probably 1990 something. I don't know. I just want to do as many things as I can do to keep my interest going, to keep my, you say you have to reinvent yourself. Well, you do, I guess, but also, I mean, I just want to do as much as I can do. I mean, you did it too. I mean, with your going into baseball and also you did things that weren't involving writing. Everything I've done has involved writing, okay, but different kinds of writing. And so, yeah, I wanted to write a novel, and I wrote it, and it was an interesting experience. But it wasn't until about 5 or 6 years ago that I really started taking that novel writing very, very seriously, and I've written like 5 novels since. Well, and 2 with Janet Ivanovich too. So I've written like 6 novels in the past 5 years. You know,
and they're mystery novels.
Have
you always been a fan of mystery novels?
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I was a kid, the books I used to read, you know, were, you know, Raymond Chandler, Dashiell Hammett, Travis McGee, John Neil McDonald books. I mean, I just love those books. And along with also horror fiction like Richard Matheson and Robert Bloch. But I, in the back of my mind, I always loved that kind of writing and wanted to do that kind of writing. And you know, screenplays I've written have been thrillers and all that. So when I and I tried to write a few books that were kind of like straddling genres, that was like sort of a romance and sort of a thriller and sort of a this and sort of that. And so a couple of years ago, I wanted to say, no, let's just write one that's an absolute genre book. That's just a hard-boiled, you know, detective mystery crime novel, you know. So I wrote Crush, and I've written 3 books in that series, Crush, Heart Attack and Vine, and Colorado Boulevard. And I just love it. I mean, it's just great fun. It's just great fun. I can't tell you how wonderful it is I guess I'm kind of unusual in that I really like writing. I mean, I really enjoy...
Do you write every day? Do you write at a certain time every day?
I write all day. I write whenever I can. I just write. And, I mean, there are some aspects of writing that I like more than others. Coming up with a story is kind of hard for me. Uh-huh. But once I have the story and the outline in, and I'm writing the scenes, and I'm writing, you know, the exchange between the characters and what goes on, I just love it. I mean, time goes away, and I'm just in another zone, and I just love it. And when you're writing a novel, and that's all you're doing, which I was able to do for about 2 or 3 years because I was doing it with Janet Ivanovich, and she was paying me. you just get into the flow of it, and you're just writing all the time, and just everything just seems to feed it and all that. It's a wild, wonderful experience. But it gets, do I miss writing with other writers? Do I miss the room?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. I mean, there are times when you're there and you're writing and you can't figure out what to do next, and there's nobody to turn to. Well, so what do you think? But on the other hand, you don't have to persuade anybody that your way is the right way, because you're the only one there. So I like doing both. I like doing both. But it's a great experience. And also, I mean, in working in screenplays, when I worked as a screenwriter, you can have boxes and boxes of drafts of movies, of, you know, that never got made, you know, just, you know, you get 20
yeah.
drafts.
Yeah,
of
I
a
can
movie
show you some
that
of them.
Never
yeah.
got made.
Yeah, I got a
and,
closet.
And you think, you know, what? You're going to give that to somebody and say, hey, read this script I wrote 5 years ago that nobody made. Nobody wants to read that, right?
Right.
But, you know, a book, is a book. It's there. It exists. It's a real definite thing. That's
actors won't kill it.
Actors won't kill it. And if somebody wants to make a movie of it, and they make a terrible movie of it, that's fine. They'll pay me something, and the book will still exist.
Right.
So I haven't had that happen yet, but they're finished things that you can point to and say, I did this, and it has your name on it. And you know that. That's a thrill.
Yeah.
Nothing like having a book out with your name on it. It's a wonderful experience. And you don't have to, you know, I mean, to try and pitch and convince somebody to give you the money to make the movie or do the pilot or all that sort of thing, it's just, you get to go jump through so many hoops that it's... I mean,
it's liberating to be able to just write what you want to write.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I like production. I like working with actors. I like working with directors. I like working with set designers, all that stuff. So I like being able to put on a show and all that. And here you have to do it all yourself. You have to do the costumes and the sets and all that stuff. You know, you have to do that all yourself. But it's a very liberating thing.
What was it like working with Janet Ivanovich?
It was cool. I mean, having worked in television and having worked for, you know, it's like writing an episode of Boston Legal. You had to write like David Kelly, or you know, writing an episode of Cheers to a certain extent. You had to write like Glenn Less and David Lloyd and you and everybody. You know, you get the voice of the show, you know, so you just had to write in the voice of the writer.
Did you meet her a lot? Did you have work out the stories with her and
among
stuff?
The movies that I wrote that never got made were I wrote the first adaptation of her first mystery, One for the Money.
Oh.
Years and years, not the version that they made with Katherine Heigl. I had nothing to do with that. This is years and years ago. It went around the same time as The Fan. I wrote the first adaptation of that, and she really liked the script. And so we remained friends. And then, of course, she went up in the stratosphere and makes $20 million and stuff. And she was writing a series of books with a friend of mine, Lee Goldberg. And, I just wrote her and said, hey, you know, congratulations, that's great, and good luck on the books. And she said, do you want to do one? And I said, sure, you know, because the money is pretty good. It paid roughly what it pays to work on a show, you know.
She didn't just split the $20 million with you?
No. And she did not. but to give you an idea what it was like, you know, I talked to her on the phone, and then she was going to be out here. She lives in Florida. She was going to be out here meeting with her agents, William Morris or whatever. And she said, well, why don't you fly back to Florida with me and we can talk about it? I thought, oh, okay, that'll be nice. And I realized she meant fly back in her private jet.
You didn't get a private jet as part of the deal.
I didn't get a private jet as part of the deal.
Yeah, get a
new
agent.
We worked out the story together, and then I would write the first draft, and then she would fix it. But it was a cool experience, and it was very much like writing an episode of a show. I mean, I think the reason she likes working with me and Lee is that.
You both come from television.
Yeah, she's done it with other novelists, and then she gives them notes, and I think, what? Why are you changing this? You know, you learn so early on. You get the shit beat out of you so early on. But I thought I listened to your last podcast about the improv class, and I thought, you know, I never did improv class, but I did like the Change This. Was that what it was called?
New choice.
Because lots of times the notes you get on the network are just that. They're new choice. Like, why is she so mad here? Well, she's mad because that's what anybody would be. I mean, of course she'd be mad at that. What are you, crazy? And then you start thinking to yourself, it's a completely arbitrary note. And it doesn't make any sense, but what if she wasn't mad? What if she didn't react with anger? That'd be an interesting choice. And so you just write it there are other ways to write scenes.
Right.
And I think as a young writer, the real reason everybody digs in their heels about notes isn't just that the notes are stupid, although they often are, but also that they can't think of another way to do it.
Uh-huh.
You have to do it because that's the only way to do it. That's what it is. It's written that way. And you learn very early on that there's always another choice, there's always another joke, there's always another path you can take. And often, not always, often it's better, often it's just different, and sometimes it's worse. But, you know...
Now, are your novels heavily plotted beforehand, or are you one of these guys that you just have an idea and you just go, and you don't know who the actual murderer is until you get there?
My first novels were very, very, very well plotted out. I basically wrote an outline.
But you were new to the genre, too.
Everything that I did. I basically write a script, you know, a screenplay of it. Since then, I kind of am kind of looser with it. Although, I sort of know where I'm going, but I don't necessarily know how I'm going to get there, you know. I don't know how I'm going to get there. And often I don't know who did it, if it's a mystery. And I think that's actually good, because if you know who did it all the way through, I think you telegraph as you're writing.
Yeah,
I think you're a telegraph.
Yeah, because I think for the other side, too, you know, as a writer, if I don't know who did it, clearly it's going to be the butler.
Yeah, but then you can go in and go... back and fix.
Can you make the butler the murderer anymore?
Well,
is it possible?
Can you have a butler?
Are you allowed to make the butler the murderer?
I don't know. Does anybody have a butler anymore? That's what I want to know.
Oh, we have three.
But I think the old Doctorow said it was like, you know, the writing a novel is like driving down a highway at night. You know, you can see what's in front of you when the headlights, and you know that there's a whole lot behind you, and you know there's a whole lot in front of you, but you can only just see that part you're in. And I always thought that was very true. And I always thought also that a half-hour comedy, you know, an episode of a half-hour comedy, you can hold in your head pretty much the whole thing.
Yeah.
You can figure out what goes on, you know. Even an hour one, you can kind of do that. Screenplays are tougher. They're kind of, you know, they have the three-act structure,
right,
whatever the hell that means. Ooh. And
usually, like, a great idea at the beginning, a great conclusion, and what do you do for an hour and 20 minutes in the middle?
Yeah, I just wrote a wonderful script that was 53 pages long. Oh, well. Anyway, but a novel, I mean... You can't hold it. You can't even begin to hold it in your head at once. You just have to. You have to go back, and you have to refer to stuff, and you have to. I can't imagine taking less than 4 months or 6 months to write a novel.
How long does it take you?
I've heard that some novels we wrote it in a month or wrote it in a week. I don't know whether that can be true. It takes me about 6 months to write. It took me several years to write my first novels, of course, because no one was waiting for them. I did write one with Jana in 3 months, but I hurt my head. It was very painful. Obviously that has to be all that you're doing. But it would be nice if you could take a year to do it.
Mm-hmm. Do you do a lot of rewriting? Do you do like draft after draft?
I rewrite as I go along. In other words, I'll go back and rewrite it so as I go along, and then.
Oh man, I couldn't do that. If I did that, I would be on the first 30 pages forever. I'm one of those guys. I have to just write straight through, and I keep a pad of notes for, okay, when I go back, address
I have to address it right then. I have to do it and then when I'm thinking of and do that. So, yeah, I'm always going back and always going back and going back. And of course, my beginnings always change because that's the hardest part. I've taken actually to when I'm writing scripts or writing novels, actually not starting at the beginning. Actually,
interesting.
Actually picking a scene in the middle or, you know, two-thirds of the way through or a third of the way through that I know what it is and just I can write that first. And then I go back and do the beginning because the beginning is so intimidating to me. I mean, you know.
You have to set up the world characters.
Yeah, and also, you know, with this series character, I never thought about it before, but you have a character and a few characters that are the regulars in the series character in the book. Well, you have to describe them in every book. But you can't describe them the same way.
Right.
So how many ways can you write? He's big and strong and he has a bald head and then this, that. You know?
And you have readers who now follow it. And they're going like, okay, I know what he looks like.
There are writers who, you know, I read these books with that in mind now, and there are writers that just do take the same description and put it in. I thought, well, okay, I guess you could do that, but it's very cool. It's very cool, and I don't know. There is a great feeling when you come to the end of a book. You know, it's a terrific feeling, and it kind of don't get that as much when you get to the end of the script because you just know that. I mean, when I finish a draft of a script or a screenplay or a Hallmark movie that I'm writing now, I generally like wait a day before I turn it in because from the moment I turn it in, all I can do is think, oh fuck, the notes are going to be terrible. Oh, I have no idea. But in that brief period of time when it's finished and I'm not working on it, but I haven't handed it in to anybody, I'm free.
That's great. Well, you did the audio book for one of your books. Talk about that. What was that experience like?
It was great. It was great. It was wonderful. I always wanted to do it, and the hardest thing about it was that I would at first when I was reading it, I said, "Well, I can change stuff, right? I mean, I can, you know, if because some of these lines are kind of clunky. I mean, to be honest, you know, and I could just rephrase. No, it has to be word for word exactly the same. Why? Well, because of whisper sync. What the hell is whisper sync? I guess when you go along and if you have a Kindle, you can listen to the book and read it and it'll highlight the words. Now, who would do that? I don't know who would do that. Who would read it and listen to it at the same time? I listen to books when I'm driving, when I'm doing stuff, and when I'm reading, I read. But anyway, okay.
I asked the same question when I did my book
You had to do it exactly as written. So that was kind of odd. And it did make me realize also that when you write a book, if you had the time and if you could have a victim, you really ought to read it aloud. You really ought to read it aloud because then you can tell when those lines are kind of clunky or when you repeated a word a bunch of times and you hadn't noticed it or all those things.
What I recommend to young writers, no matter what you're writing, read it out loud.
Yeah. Now I can't think of who I could possibly read it to that would want to listen to me reading an entire book. I mean, I couldn't do that to my wife. It would be horrible grounds for divorce. But I couldn't.
Kids are for,
my kids don't read them. And you can't read it to yourself because that isn't the same. You know, you have to have somebody. But there were a couple of typos in the book, too. And I thought, do I have to read the typos? Do I have to read the typos that way? Do I make sense out of them?
That'd be a good job for somebody to be the listener.
Yeah,
okay, I'll go to your house
for
4 days and I'll listen to you do the book.
If I was Janet Ivanovich, I could afford one. But it turned out really well. I really liked it. I liked doing all the characters. I loved the experience.
Did you do character voices and stuff? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You have to.
Uh-huh. Yeah. The actor in you.
I guess so. And it was great. And the main character of that book is more like me than crushes. So I could do it. I don't know. It was fun. It was great. And I think we've sold like 26 of them. So
yeah. Well, yeah. But well, I sold 150.
But your listeners will go out and buy it like that. It's called 15 Minutes to Live, and it's on Amazon, and you can buy it and listen to it to your heart's content as you drive. It's a very exciting thriller. A lot of sex in it. Very cool.
Final question.
Yes.
So, plays, movies, half-hour comedy, hour comedy, novels. If you had to choose one, if you could only do one, which would it be?
Well, I mean, I hope I wouldn't have to choose, because I do like doing all of them. I really do.
I know. But if I would
choose novels. It's just so much more you. Much more of the individual, your individual voice coming through, and the fans, they read it, and they actually are aware that you have written it. Because, you know, the problem with TV and movies, of course, is that they think the actors came up with all the lines, you know, and they don't really think that somebody wrote it, you know?
No, and then you'll pick up Entertainment Weekly, and there's that page every week where it's like a montage of actors and, like the cartoon, Bubbles with lines from their shows.
Yeah.
Attributed to them, and you go, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Jennifer Lawrence didn't say that. A writer wrote that.
Yeah. I mean, Claude Rains didn't say gambling. I'm shocked that gambling is going on in this establishment. It was the Epstein brothers, right? Or whoever wrote that particular thing.
Because there were like 15 writers.
That's the other thing, of course. It is sadly true that a lot of the stuff you hear in movies is credited to the writer whose name isn't even on the screen. And now I think that's kind of funny, because at the end credits of movies nowadays, they have end of everybody, the
caterers,
somebody's hairdresser and the guy who delivered coffee, that sort of thing. But they don't list the person who wrote that scene, because he's not credited with the writing for the Writers Guild and all that. That's always struck me as kind of odd, I mean, I've written some scenes from movies that my name isn't on that are pretty memorable.
Talk a little bit about your books. It's been great having you. These are available on Amazon, and I guess if there is a bookstore, you can probably find them, right?
I think so.
What are your books?
Well,
again?
I mean, the newest one out I have out was called From Away, and it's a not particularly a mystery, sort of a supernatural story about a brother and sister who live in Maine, and there are ghosts in it, and sex. There's sex in it, and it's a really good book. I'm very proud of it. And then like a month before that, I had my third crush book come out called Colorado Boulevard, which is about crushes a bodyguard and nightclub bouncer who gets involved in all sorts of adventures in Los Angeles. And Los Angeles is sort of a major character in the books. And I don't know, they've gotten good reviews, great reviews, and they have good write-ups on the back. And they're
great books.
Yeah,
thank you very much. It's been a joy having you here.
Thank you.
And there you go. That's my interview with Thief Sutton. I love talking to writers, because they always have fascinating stories, don't they? Anyway, thanks so much to Thief, along with Adam and Susie Meister-Butler, Howard Hoffman, John Wolfert, and Randy Thomas. You can follow me, as always, on Twitter, at Ken Levine. Why are you not following me yet? And if you have any comments or questions, you can always email me at HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. Once again, HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. Back next week with another scintillating episode, I'm sure. Thanks so much for listening. I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye. Hollywood.